Chapter 3. He woke up with the feeling that he was being watched. The woman was sitting on the sofa, but she was not looking at him. She was looking out of the window. He had expected to find her gone. He was annoyed that she was still there. He could not stand people around him in the morning. He thought of trying to fall asleep again, but it was disturbing to know that the woman might be watching him. He made up his mind to get rid of her at once. If she was waiting for money, it was simple. It would be easy in any case. He sat up. "Have you been up long?" The woman started and looked at him.
"I couldn't sleep any longer. I'm sorry if I woke you."
"You did not wake me." She got up.
"I wanted to leave. I don't know what kept me sitting here."
"Wait, I'll soon be ready. You'll have breakfast, the famous coffee of the hotel. We both will have enough time for that." He rose and rang the bell. Then he went into the bathroom. He noticed that she had used it, but everything was neatly arranged and in place, even the used bath towels. While brushing his teeth, he heard the chambermaid come in with the breakfast. He hurried.
"Did it embarrass you?" he asked when he came out of the bathroom.
"What?"
"Because the girl saw you. I didn't think of that."
"No, nor was she surprised."
The woman looked at the tray. It was breakfast for two persons, although Ravitch had not said anything.
"Of course not. This is Paris. Here, drink your coffee. Have you a headache?"
"No."
"Well, I have. But it will be gone in an hour. Here, a brioche."
"I can't eat."
"Of course you can. You only imagine you can't. Try something."
She took the brioche. Then she put it back again.
"I really can't."
"Then drink your coffee and have a cigarette. That's a soldier's breakfast."
"Yes."
Ravitch ate.
"Aren't you hungry yet?"
he asked after a while.
"No."
The woman put out her cigarette.
"I think,"
she said and stopped.
"What do you think?"
Ravitch asked without interest.
"I should be going now."
"Do you know your way? This is near the Avenue Wagram."
"No."
"Where do you live?"
"In the Hotel Verdun."
"It's a few minutes from here. I can direct you outside. Anyway, I'll have to take you past the porter."
"Well, yes, but it's not that."
She was silent again.
"Money," Ravitch thought. "I can easily help you out if you are hard up."
He took his wallet out of his pocket.
"Don't. What's that for?"
the woman said brusquely.
"Nothing."
Ravitch put the wallet back.
"Excuse me."
She rose.
"You were... I have to thank you. It would have been... the night... alone. I wouldn't have known..."
Ravitch remembered what had happened. It would have been ridiculous if the woman had made any claim on him, but he had not expected her to thank him, and it was far more disturbing.
"I really would not have known,"
the woman said.
She was still standing before him, undecided. "Why doesn't she go?" he thought. "But now you know?"
he said, just to say something.
"No,"
she looked at him frankly.
"I do not know yet. I only know that I must do something. I know that I cannot escape."
"Well, that's a lot." Ravitch took his coat. "I'll take you down now."
"It's not necessary. Only tell me..."
She hesitated, searching for words.
"Perhaps you know what must be done if..."
"If?"
Ravitch said after a while.
"If someone dies,"
the woman blurted and suddenly collapsed. She wept. She did not sob, she merely wept, almost soundlessly. Ravitch waited until she was calmer.
"Has someone died?"
She nodded.
"Last night?"
She nodded again.
"Did you kill him?"
The woman stared at him.
"What? What did you say?"
"Did you do it? When you ask me what to do, you must tell me."
"He died," the woman cried. "He died. Suddenly he was..."
She covered her face.
"Was he sick?" Ravitch asked.
"Yes."
"Did you have a doctor?"
"Yes, but he did not want to go to the hospital."
Did you have the doctor yesterday?
No, earlier, 3 days ago. He ranted against the doctor and refused to see him again.
Didn't you call another doctor afterwards?
We didn't know any. We have only been here 3 weeks. This one, the waiter got us this one, and he did not want him any more. He said he thought he would be better off without him.
What was the matter with him?
I don't know. The doctor said pneumonia, but he didn't believe him. He said all doctors are crooks, and he was really feeling better yesterday. Then suddenly...
Why didn't you take him to the hospital?
He did not want to go. He said I would betray him when he was away. You don't know him. There was nothing to be done.
Is he still at the hotel?
Yes.
Did you tell the owner of the hotel what had happened?
No. Suddenly, when he grew silent, and everything was so silent, and his eyes, I couldn't bear it and ran away.
Ravitch thought about the night. For a moment he was embarrassed. But it had happened, and it was unimportant, to him and to the woman, particularly to the woman. This night nothing really had mattered to her, and only one thing was important, that she go through it. Life consisted of more than sentimental similes. The night Lavinia had heard that his wife was dead, he had spent in a brothel. The whores had saved him. A priest could not have helped him through it. Whoever understood this, understood it. There was no explanation for it, but responsibilities went along with it. He took his coat. Come, I'll go with you. Was it your husband?
No,
the woman said. The patron of the Hotel Verdun was fat. He hadn't a single hair on his skull, but to make up for it he had a dyed black moustache and bushy black eyebrows. He was standing in the lobby. Behind him, a waiter, a chambermaid, and a cashier with a flat bosom. It was evident that he already knew everything. He burst into abuse as soon as he saw the woman enter. His face paled, he waved his fat little hands in the air, and he sputtered with rage, indignation, and, as Ravitch saw, relief. When he came to police, alien suspicion, and prison, Ravitch interrupted him.
"Do you come from Provence?" he asked.
The patron stopped short.
"No. What do you mean?" he asked in surprise.
"Nothing," Ravitch replied. "I only wanted to interrupt you. An utterly senseless question is the best way. You would have gone on talking for another hour."
"Who are you, sir? What do you want?"
"That's the first intelligent sentence you've said up to now." The hotel keeper calmed down. "Who are you?" he asked more quietly, careful not to insult an influential man under any circumstances.
"I'm the doctor," Ravitch replied.
The patron saw that there was no danger here.
"There is no need of a doctor now," he burst out anew. "This is a case for the police."
He stared at Ravitch and the woman. He expected fear, protest, and entreaties.
"That's a good idea. Why aren't they already here? You've known for several hours that the man is dead."
The patron did not answer.
"I'll tell you why." Ravitch took one step forward. "You don't want a scandal because of your guests. Many people would move out if they heard about such things. But the police must come, that's the law. It's up to you to hush it up. But that wasn't what bothered you. You were afraid the mess would be left in your lap. You needn't have been. Besides, you were worried about your bill. It will be paid. And now I want to see the corpse. Then I'll take care of everything else."
He walked past the hotel keeper. "What is the room number?" he asked the woman.
14.
"You don't have to come with me. I can do it alone."
"No, I don't want to stay here."
"It would be better for you not to see any more."
"No, I will not stay here."
"All right, just as you like."
It was a front room with a low ceiling. A few chambermaids, porters, and waiters were crowded around the door. Ravitch pushed them aside. There were two beds in the room. In the one next to the wall, the body of the man was lying. He lay there yellow and stiff, with curled black hair, in red silk pyjamas. His hands were folded. A small, cheap wooden Madonna, on whose face were traces of lipstick, stood on the table beside him. Ravitch picked it up. On its back was stamped, "Made in Germany." Ravitch examined the face of the dead man. There was no rouge on his lips, nor did he seem to have been that type. The eyes were half open, one more than the other, which gave the body an expression of indifference, as if it had grown stiff in eternal boredom. Ravitch bent over the corpse. He took stock of the bottles on the table near the bed and examined the body. No trace of violence. He drew himself up. "Do you know the name of the doctor who was here?" he asked the woman.
"No."
He looked at her. She was very pale. "First of all, you sit down over there, on that chair in the corner, and stay there. Is the waiter who called the doctor for you here?" His eyes skimmed over the faces at the door. There was the same expression on each of them, horror and greed. "François was on this floor," said the charwoman, who was holding a broom like a spear in her hand. "Where is François?" A waiter pushed his way through the crowd. "What was the name of the doctor who was here?"
"Bonnet, Charles Bonnet."
"Do you know his telephone number?" The waiter fumbled for it in his pockets.
"Passy 2743.
"Good." Ravitch saw the face of the patron emerging from the crowd. "Let's close the door first. Or do you want the people from the street to come in, too?"
"No. Get out, get out. Why do you stand around here stealing my time for which you get paid?"
The patron chased the employees out of the room and closed the door. Ravitch took the receiver from the hook. He called Weber and talked to him for a short while. Then he called the Passy number. Bonnet was in his consultation room. He confirmed what the woman had said. "The man has died," Ravitch said. "Could you come over and make out the death certificate?" "That man threw me out in the most insulting manner." "He can't very well insult you now." "He didn't pay my fee. Instead, he called me an avaricious quack." "Would you come so that your bill can be paid?"
"I could send someone."
"You'd better come yourself, otherwise you will never get your money."
"I'll come," Bonnet said after some hesitation, "but I won't sign anything before I'm paid. It amounts to 300 francs.
"All right, 300, you'll get it." Ravitch hung up. "I'm sorry you had to listen to this," he said to the woman, "but there was no alternative. We need the man." The woman already had some money in her hand.
"It doesn't matter," she replied. "Such things are not new to me. Here is the money."
"There is no hurry about that. He'll be here right away, then you can give it to him."
"Couldn't you yourself sign the death certificate?"
the woman asked.
"No," Ravitch said. "We need a French physician for that. It is best to have the one who treated him."
When the door closed behind Bonnet, the room became suddenly quiet, much quieter than if just one man had left the room. The noise of cars on the streets sounded somehow tinny, as though bounced against a wall of heavy air through which it could penetrate only with difficulty. After the confusion of the past hours, the presence of the dead man was now there for the first time. His powerful silence filled the cheap, small room, and it did not matter that he wore bright red silk pajamas. He reigned even as a dead clown might reign, because he no longer moved. What lived, moved. And what moved could have power, grace, and absurdity, but never the strange majesty of that which will never move again, but only decay. What was completed alone possessed it, and man reached completion only in death, and for a short while.
"You were not married to him, were you?"
Ravitch asked.
"No. Why?"
"The law, his estate. The police will want to make a list of what belonged to you and to him. You must keep what belongs to you. What is his will be retained by the police, for his relatives, should they show up. Had he any?"
"Not in France."
"You had been living with him, hadn't you?" The woman did not answer. "For a long time?"
"For 2 years."
Ravitch looked around.
"Haven't you any suitcases?"
"I have. They were over there against the wall last night."
"I see. The patron."
Ravitch opened the door. The charwoman with the broom started back.
"Mother," he said, "for your age you are much too inquisitive. Give me the patron."
The charwoman was about to protest.
"You're right," Ravitch interrupted her. "At your age one has nothing but inquisitiveness left. Nevertheless, get me the patron."
The old woman mumbled something and disappeared, pushing the broom before her.
"I'm sorry," Ravitch said, "but it can't be helped. It may seem vulgar, yet we'd better do it right now. It's simpler, even though you may not understand it at the moment.
I do,
the woman said. Ravitch looked at her. You understand?
Yes.
The hotel keeper entered, a paper in his hand. He did not knock at the door. Where are the suitcases? Ravitch asked. First the bill. Here, you've got to pay the bill first. First the suitcases. No one has as yet refused to pay your bill. The room is still rented. And next time, knock at the door before you enter. Let me have the bill and get us the suitcases. The man gave him a furious look. You'll get your money all right, Ravitch said. The patron left. He slammed the door. Have you any money in the suitcases? Ravitch asked the woman.
No, I don't think so.
Do you know where there might be any money? In his suit, or wasn't there any?
He had money in his wallet.
Where is it?
Under... The woman hesitated. He kept it under his pillow most of the time.
Ravitch got up. He carefully lifted the pillow on which the head of the dead man rested and drew forth a black leather wallet. He gave it to the woman. Take out the money and everything that is important to you. Quickly, there is no time left for sentimentality. You've got to live. What other purpose could it serve? To moulder at police headquarters? He looked out the window for a minute. A truck driver was having a row with the driver of a grocer's wagon drawn by two horses. He was berating him with the full superiority conferred by a heavy motor. Ravitch turned around again. Ready?
Yes.
Give the wallet back to me. He pushed it under the pillow. He noticed that it was thinner than it had been. Put the things into your bag, he said. She did it obediently. Ravitch picked up the bill and perused it. Have you already paid a bill here?
I don't know. I think so.
This is a bill for 2 weeks. Did he pay? Ravitch hesitated. It struck him as strange to speak of the dead man as Mr. Razinski. Were the bills always paid promptly?
Yes, always. He often said that in our situation it is important always to pay promptly when you have to.
That scoundrel of a patron. Have you any idea where the last bill might be?
No. I only know that he kept all his papers in the small suitcase.
There was a knock at the door. Ravitch could not help smiling. The porter brought in the suitcases. The patron came in after him. Are these all? Ravitch asked the woman.
Yes.
Naturally these are all, the hotel keeper growled. What did you expect? Ravitch picked up the smaller suitcase. Have you got a key to this? No. Where can the keys be?
In his suit, in the wardrobe.
Ravitch opened the wardrobe. It was empty. Well? He asked the patron. The patron turned to the porter. Well? He spat.
The suit is outside, stammered the porter.
Why?
To be brushed and cleaned.
He does not need that any more, Ravitch said. Bring it in at once, you damned thief, the patron yelled. The porter gave him a funny look, winked, and left. He returned immediately with the suit. Ravitch shook the jacket, then the trousers. There was a clinking sound. Ravitch hesitated a moment. Strange, going through the pockets of a dead man's trousers, as if the suit had died with him. And strange to feel that way. A suit was just a suit. He took the keys out of the pocket and opened the suitcase. On top lay a canvas folder. Is this it? He asked the woman. She nodded. Ravitch found the bill at once. The bill was receipted. He showed it to the patron. You have overcharged for a whole week. What of it? He shouted. And the trouble, the mess, the excitement, all that is nothing? My gallbladder is acting up again. That ought to be included, too. You yourself said that my guests might leave. The damage is much greater. And the bed, the room that must be fumigated, the bedclothes that are filthy. The bedclothes are on the bill. Also a dinner for 25 francs that he was supposed to have eaten last night. Did you eat anything last night? He asked the woman.
No. But couldn't I just pay for it? It is... I'd like to get it over with quickly.
To get it over with quickly, Ravitch thought. We know that feeling. And then the silence and the dead man, the thud of silence. Better so, even if it is ugly.
He picked up a pencil from the table and began to figure. Then he handed the bill to the patron. "Do you agree?" The latter glanced at the final figure. "Do you think I am crazy?" "Do you agree?" Ravitch repeated. "Who are you anyway? Why are you meddling?" "I am a brother," Ravitch said. "Do you agree?" "Plus 10% for service and taxes, otherwise not." "All right," Ravitch added on the figures. "You'll have to pay 292 francs," he said to the woman. She took 300-franc notes out of her bag and gave them to the patron, who grabbed them and turned to go. "The room must be vacated by 6 o'clock, otherwise it will count as another day." "We get 8 francs change," Ravitch said. "And the concierge?" "That we'll settle ourselves." Sullenly the patron counted out 8 francs on the table. "C'est l'étranger," he muttered and left the room. The pride of some French hotel keepers consists in their hatred of foreigners from whom they make their living. Ravitch noticed the tip-conscious porter hovering at the door. "Here." The porter looked first at the bill. "Merci, monsieur," he announced, and then left. "Now we still have the police to deal with, and then he can be taken away," Ravitch said, looking toward the woman. She was sitting quietly in the corner among the suitcases in the slowly gathering dusk. "When one is dead, one becomes very important. When one is alive, nobody cares." He looked at the woman again. "Would you like to go downstairs? There must be a writing room downstairs." She shook her head. "I'll go with you. A friend of mine will come to settle the matter with the police, Dr. Weber. We may wait for him downstairs."
No, I'd like to stay here."
"There's nothing to do. Why do you want to stay here?"
"I don't know. He won't be here much longer, and I often... He wasn't happy with me. I was often away. Now I will stay."
She spoke calmly, without sentimentality. "He won't know that now," Ravitch said.
"It isn't that."
"All right. Then we'll have a drink here. You need it." Ravitch did not wait for an answer. He rang the bell. Surprisingly, the waiter appeared promptly. "Bring us 2 large cognacs.
"In here?"
"Yes, where else?"
"Very well, sir."
The waiter brought 2 glasses and a bottle of Courvoisier. He stared toward the corner where the bed glimmered whitely in the dusk.
"Shall I turn on the light?" he asked. "No, but you can leave the bottle here."
The waiter put the tray on the table and departed as quickly as he could. Ravitch took the bottle and filled the glasses.
"Drink this. It will do you good."
He expected the woman would refuse and he would have to persuade her, but she emptied the glass without hesitation.
"Is there anything else of value in the suitcases that aren't yours?"
"No."
"Something you would like to keep that could be useful to you? Why don't you take a look?"
"No. There is nothing in them, I know."
"Not even in the small suitcase?"
"Maybe. I don't know what he kept in it."
Ravitch picked up the suitcase and put it on the small table near the window. A few bottles, some underwear, a few notebooks, a box of watercolors, brushes, a book. In a compartment of the canvas folder, 2 banknotes wrapped in tissue paper. He held them up to the light.
"Here is $100, he said. "Take it. You can live on this for a while. We'll put the suitcase with your belongings. It could just as well have been yours."
"Thank you,"
the woman said.
"Possibly you find all this disgusting, but it has to be done. It is important to you. It will give you a little time."
"I don't find it disgusting, only I couldn't have done it myself."
Ravitch filled the glasses again.
"Have another drink."
She emptied the glass slowly.
"Do you feel better now?" he asked.
She looked at him.
"Neither better nor worse. Nothing."
The dusk enveloped her. Sometimes the red reflections of the neon lights flickered across her face and hands.
"I can't think at all," she said, "as long as he is here."
The 2 ambulance men turned back the blanket and put the stretcher down near the bed. Then they lifted the body. They did it quickly and in a businesslike manner. Ravitch stood close to the woman to be at hand in case she fainted.
Before the men covered the body, he bent down and took the small wooden Madonna from the night table. "I think that belongs to you," he said. "Don't you want to keep it?"
"No."
He gave it to her. She did not take it. He opened the smaller suitcase and put it in. The ambulance men covered the corpse with a cloth. Then they lifted the stretcher. The door was too narrow, and the corridor outside was not very wide. They tried to get it through, but it was impossible. The stretcher hit against the wall. "We must take him off," said the older man. "We can't turn the corner this way." He looked at Ravitch. "Come," Ravitch said to the woman. "We'll wait downstairs." She shook her head. "All right," he said to the man. "Do what you think necessary." Both men lifted the body, holding it by the feet and shoulders, and put it on the floor. Ravitch wanted to say something. He watched the woman. She did not move. He kept silent. The men carried the stretcher into the hall. Then they came back into the dusk and carried the body out into the dimly lit corridor. Ravitch followed them. They had to lift the stretcher very high in order to go down the stairs. Their faces swelled and became red and wet with perspiration under the weight, and the dead body swung heavily above them. Ravitch's eyes followed them until they reached the foot of the stairs. Then he went back. The woman was standing near the window, looking out. The car was parked on the street. The men pushed the stretcher into it like bakers pushing bread into the oven. Then they climbed up on their seats. The motor roared as if someone were crying out from underground, and the car shot around the corner in a sharp curve. The woman turned around. "You should have left before," Ravitch said. "Why did you have to see the end of it?"
"I could not. I could not leave before him. Don't you understand that?"
"Yes. Come, have another drink."
"No."
Weber had turned on the light when the ambulance and police came. The room seemed bigger now that the body was gone, bigger and strangely dead, as though the body had gone out and death alone was left. "Do you want to stay here in the hotel?" "I imagine not."
"No."
"Do you have any friends here?"
"No, no one."
"Do you know a hotel where you'd like to live?"
"No."
"There is a small hotel in the neighborhood, similar to this one, clean and decent. The Hôtel de Milan. We might find something for you there."
"Couldn't I go to the hotel where... to your hotel?"
"The International?"
"Yes. I know it by now, somehow. It is better than one entirely unknown."
"The International is not the right hotel for women," Ravitch said. That would be the finishing touch, he thought. "In the same hotel? I am not a nurse. And besides, maybe she thinks I already have some sort of responsibility. That could be." "I can't advise you to go there," he said in a harsher voice than he intended. "It is always overcrowded, with refugees. Stay at the Hôtel de Milan. If you don't like it there, you may move whenever you like." The woman looked at him. He felt she knew what he was thinking, and he was embarrassed. But it was better to be embarrassed for an instant and to be left alone later.
"Good," the woman said. "You are right."
Ravitch ordered the suitcases carried down to a taxi. The Hôtel de Milan was only a few minutes' ride. He rented a room and went upstairs with the woman. It was a room on the second floor, with wallpaper of rose garlands, a bed, a wardrobe, and a table with two chairs. "Is this all right?" he asked.
"Yes. Very good."
Ravitch eyed the wallpaper. It was terrible. "At least it seems to be clean in here," he said. "Bright and clean."
"Yes."
The suitcases were brought upstairs. "Now you have everything here."
"Yes, thanks. Many thanks."
She sat down on the bed. Her face was pale and expressionless. "You should go to bed. Do you think you will be able to sleep?"
"I'll try."
He took an aluminum tube out of his pocket and shook a few tablets out of it. "Here is something to make you sleep, with water. Do you want to take it now?"
"No, later."
"All right. I'll go now. I'll look you up one of these days. Try to sleep as soon as possible. Here is the address of the funeral parlor in case something comes up, but don't go there. Think of yourself. I'll come around.
Ravitch hesitated a moment.
What's your name? He asked.
Madhu. Joan Madhu.
Joan Madhu. All right, I'll remember it. He knew he would not remember it, and he would not look her up. But because he knew it, he wished to keep up appearances. I'd better write it down, he said, and took a prescription pad out of his vest pocket. Oh, here, write it yourself. That's simpler.
She took the pad and wrote down her name. He looked at it, tore the sheet off, and stuck it in a side pocket of his coat.
Go to bed right away, he said. Tomorrow everything will seem different. It sounds stupid and trite, but it is true. All you need now is sleep and a little time. A certain amount of time that you have to get through. Do you know that?
Yes, I know.
Take the tablets and sleep well.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for everything. I don't know what I would have done without you. I really don't know.
She offered her hand. It was cool to the touch, and she had a firm clasp. Good, he thought. There is some determination here already.
Ravitch stepped into the street. He inhaled the moist, soft wind. Automobiles, people, a few early whores already at the corners, brasserie, bistros, the smell of tobacco, aperitif and gasoline, quick, fluctuating life. How sweet it could taste in passing. He looked up at the hotel front. A few lighted windows. Behind one of them the woman was sitting now and staring straight ahead. He took the slip with her name out of his pocket, tore it up and threw it away. Forget. What a word, he thought, full of horror, comfort, and apparitions. Who could live without forgetting? But who could forget enough? The ashes of memory that ground one's heart. Only when one had nothing more to live for was one free. He went to the Place de l'Étoile. A great crowd filled the square. Searchlights had been placed behind the Arc de Triomphe. They illuminated the tomb of the unknown soldier. A huge blue-white-red flag waved in the wind in front of it. It was the celebration of the 20th anniversary of the 1918 armistice. The sky was overcast, and the beam of the searchlights threw the shadow of the flag against the floating clouds, dull and blurred and torn. It looked like a ragged flag which gradually melted into the slowly darkening sky. Somewhere a military band was playing. It sounded weak and thin. There was no singing. The crowd stood silent. "Armistice," an old woman said at Ravitch's side. "I lost my husband in the last war. Now it's my son's turn." "Armistice. Who knows what next year will bring?"